My job is to just get you to share some of that with each other. I love that. So, 8th anniversary of becoming an affirming ministry today. If you have been here for a while, you'll have heard some of my story. I don't care. What are you going to do? Fire me? I'm going to say some of it again. So, it's also the 8th anniversary of me coming through those doors for the very first time. Okay? So, at that point, I had taken about 3 years off from church, which is awesome. But it was also really odd for me because I grew up in church and actually I really loved church a lot. But I had to, in the tradition that I was in, I had to self-exile at some point because I knew that if I was who I was, that they would do the exiling for me. So I took 3 years off and I didn't know if I would ever come back again. But at that time I was talking to, I had a counselor who was a retired priest. And I remember sitting across from him, and I felt really sheepish about it because he knew my whole story. And I said, I know this sounds weird, but I kind of want to go to church. But I want to bring my whole self. And he said, you know what? There's only one place that I can think of off the top of my head. And there's this church in Kensington, and I've heard a couple of good things about the minister. I don't know who he was talking about, but... love you. And they have a little rainbow sticker on their sign. He knew about the rogue rainbow sticker. And he said, so you might want to check that out. So I went on to Google Church Kensington. He didn't even know the name of it. And I found this church. And I saw on their website, they were talking about, they were doing the Real Theology series. They were talking about Oscar-nominated films, and the one they were talking about that upcoming Sunday was Milk, the Harvey Milk story. And I thought, do they know what that's about? Like, did they just pick from a hat, or... So I was like, okay, interesting. So I thought about it for a couple of days, and, you know, none of my friends really wanted to come into a church, right? And I couldn't blame them. And so I decided at the last minute on that Sunday morning, oh, I'm going to go. And I looked like I do now. I wasn't wearing a gender roles are dead shirt like I am today, which I'm very proud of. But I came in. And it was really busy. It was really packed. And because we only had one service at the time. And there was only, it was Marsha, I think, who like sat me in the second row right here. And I thought, oh, great. Like, if this is a trick, they're going to find me for sure. I was like, where's the exits? I don't really know. And I sat next to a straight couple, which is fine. You just have to keep an eye on them, you know? And so I sat there, and I'm just watching what's happening. And I notice in the corner, there was a rainbow banner, sort of like that one. And I was like, oh, they had this little sticker outside, but I didn't know that, like, there would be a rainbow banner, like, a few feet away from a cross. That could happen. So I watched the service, and I watched the rainbow candles being lit and readings similar to the ones we had today. And then a woman got up, and she shared her story, and she said, this is the first church I've been to where I can talk about my wife and family, and nobody blinks an eye. And then the minister got up and talked about Milk, and turns out he knew what the movie was about. And he said positive things about it. It wasn't anti at all. And I thought, I mean, I'm fine without church. I don't need it. I can make my spiritual journey a solo venture. And I had to. But could this be a place where I could come and be different, and where that difference was actually celebrated. Now, I didn't come back for a year and a half, and I only started coming to church because they hired me, and I had to. They tricked me. You don't have to come to church if you work here. Right. But ever since then, I've asked myself that question every day. Is this a place where people can come and be different? How can I be a part of that? How can I be a part of stewarding that so that people who come in and don't want people to be different know that that's not okay? Can this be a place? The film Moonlight, which we saw the trailer of, is part of our text for today, and it shows us another journey of difference. Writer Lali Muhammad summarized Moonlight in this way. It's a story of robbed innocence, of a trepid, almost smashed adolescence, of a barren adult life. In a world that would otherwise see a boy like Chiron disappear, he becomes a man that insists on carving out a life for himself. Moonlight is a secret whispered by a man at three stages of his life about what it's like to want, to need, and to love. We see the shy protagonist, Chiron, navigating masculinity and identity at ages 10, 16, and 30-something. In each of the chapters, he struggles with his mother's addictions, with his peers' impressions of him, and with feelings toward a friend named Kevin. Chiron lives in the intersecting marginalizations of being Black, poor, and gay in the city of Miami, where the crack epidemic was taking hold in the 1980s. The film is based on Terrell Alvin McCraney's semi-autobiographical play in Moonlight, Black Boys Look Blue. And many scenes are based on his experiences, as well as those of Barry Jenkins, the director, and they actually grew up within a few streets of each other in the same neighborhood. A major theme of Moonlight is the male identity and the influences of toxic masculinity and how it encourages boys and men to express themselves through violence, bullying, and emotional stifling in order to be considered a real man. It asks us, how does society shape us? What behavior do we reward, or are we shamed for? The through line, which takes its time to unfold intricately, is the biggest secret Chiron holds on to throughout his life, and his own inner question, how do I not be different? In his masculinity and his economic status, his appearance, and foremost, his sexual identity. Trevante Rhodes, the actor who played Chiron as an adult, said that one of the ways that he prepared for the role was to walk the streets of his city, Los Angeles, for 3 weeks every day, acting as if he had a secret to hide. Feeling as if he connected with someone they would see inside him, see his insecurities, know who he was, and take his power away from him. He wanted to feel how deep self-hatred could be when you were incapable of loving others because you just could not love yourself. How many of us would not have to do that research to know what that feels like? Moonlight is the first Best Picture winner about Black characters that is not about racism, and the first LGBT movie to win Best Picture in its, I believe, 89-year history. There's never been an LGBT movie that's won Best Picture where the protagonist is actually gay. In most films, queer people are deployed as villains, flamboyant tropes, and narrative props that enable heterosexual characters to go on a journey of their own self-discovery. They are rarely central characters with real feelings. Queerness is scrubbed out and redacted all of the time from books, from movies, from history. Historians are only beginning to scratch the surface of our own histories because either they've never been noted, they've been erased, or the people writing the histories of us are writing only to show that we are abnormal. How can we help but not want to be normal when we never get to see ourselves, or we only see ourselves as props in someone else's stories? I wonder if any of you know the name Bayard Rustin. Bayard was Martin Luther King Jr.'s assistant for many years, and he was actually the one who organized the Montgomery bus boycott and the famous March on Washington in 1963, where the "I Have a Dream" speech was delivered. Bayard was the one, unequivocally, who catapulted King onto the world stage. However, he was eventually forced to resign from the Southern Leadership Conference, of which he and King were a part of, because of threats from colleagues that they would out him for being gay. Bayard continued civil rights work and eventually gay rights work, but mostly behind the scenes because of the attacks until the 80s. I didn't know about Bayard until last week. And why? Why don't we know about him just as we know about Martin Luther King Jr.? Because he was different in many ways, but even within his own movement, he was forced to hide. And who else are we missing out on because they've been erased from our stories? I was thinking, I don't believe that money is the root of all evil. I think the root of all evil is our fear of difference. Fear of difference is at the heart of every war, every election, every bottle or insult thrown from a moving car. Fear of difference causes people to take innocent lives without thinking. We hate what we do not know, not realizing that we can't do that without hating ourselves. In the movie The Imitation Game, which I talked about a few years ago, it's about Alan Turing, who was the gay mathematician who cracked Germany's Enigma code in World War II, shortening the war by 2 to 4 years, saving an estimated 14 to 21 million lives. In the film, Alan's character says this: "The interesting question is, just because something thinks differently from you, does that mean it's not thinking? We allow for humans to have such divergences from one another. You like strawberries. I hate ice skating. You cry at sad films. I'm allergic to pollen. What is the point of different tastes, of different preferences, if not to say that our brains work differently, that we simply think differently?" I love the simplicity of pointing out that we are meant to be different. We're not thinking about being different to be cool. We're just meant to be. Not all of us like strawberries. Not all of us express ourselves, our gender, our realities in the same way. You were created to be you on purpose. And it's not an accident or a mistake waiting to be pushed and prodded in order to be fixed. And our scripture today, the parable of the lost sheep, is being told by Jesus. Jesus was hanging out with what the scriptures called people of doubtful reputations and social outcasts. And the religious scholars of that time were angry. How could he do that? How could he do that? And not only was he associating with them, he was eating with them, if you can imagine. And Jesus overheard them talking, as he often did. And he responded with this parable. He looked at them and said, "Wouldn't every single one of you, if you had 100 sheep and you lost one, leave the 99 and go out into the wilderness and search for the lost sheep until you found it? And when you find the lost sheep, wouldn't you put it across your shoulders and return home rejoicing? Wouldn't you say, 'Come over and celebrate with me because I've found my lost sheep'? There's more joy over this one rescued life than over the 99 who needed no rescue." And just in case they didn't get it, we read in that chapter of Luke 15, Jesus goes into the parable of the lost coin, which is the same message. And then he goes into one of his most famous parables of the prodigal son. And in all of those stories, we hear this message: you are never lost. No matter if you feel left behind, and if others have moved on without even noticing, no matter how different you feel from the rest of the herd, I will find you. You can never be lost. And I say this today because I want you to know that as great as Hillhurst is and as thankful as I am for it, it didn't save me. I didn't need to be saved. I was tired. I was in pain, but I was never lost. God never left me. And God's never left you. I simply found a place where I could be and bring my whole self. And I wanted to make sure that other people could have that feeling and that community. In the last scene of Moonlight, we find Chiron and Kevin as adults, seeing each other again for the first time since Kevin beat up Chiron in high school to prove he wasn't like him. There's an attempt for reconciliation and the remains of a romance that was cut off before it could begin. And yet both men wind around the stories of their lives, saying everything but what they really want to say, because they know the consequences could be too great. They're waiting for the other person to crack, because then maybe they'll be able to fall apart too and tell someone exactly who they are and be fully embraced. The movie ends with just a glimpse of hopeful uncertainty, and we are left to wonder and dream about how their futures will unfold. So now I go back to the beginning with the same question for us and for myself, as I've asked myself every day for the past 6 years. Is this a place where people can come and be different? And it's actually not about the church. It's not about our values or our mission or even our affirming statement, as important as that is. All of those things are words, and we can easily choose to embody those words or not. Words are important, and they can hold meaning and substance, but still, in a short time, we as people could change the entire trajectory of the church, regardless of what we've committed to. Because the church is not this building. The church is not even the rainbow banner, as much as it pains me to say that. The church is you. The church is me. How we treat each other inside and outside of this building, if we really feel like there's room for others. It's about being inclusive, but also not allowing dangerous things to happen and not allowing others to perpetuate harm in our lives or in our communities and our churches. The question is not really whether we want to be an affirming church. The question is whether we want to be affirming people in our whole lives outside of this place, whether we are walking sanctuaries or not. Would we leave the 99 and go into the wilderness for the one? Will we remind people that they have never been lost, but they can have a home here? We can crack the lie that so many of us have been told, that's rolled through our heads: how do I not be different? How do I not be different? How do I not be different? And we can be a people, a community, a culture that says, be different, like on these buttons that you're going to get later. And how amazing can it be if we can journey together, not in spite of, but because of our differences? I don't know yet what that looks like for me or for you, but I want to find out. Amen. Thank you.